Good evening, everybody. It's the Tri-State Sports Guys. We're coming to you live from Hoboken, New Jersey, the Broken, a.k.a. No Joking. If you got the email this week, you know that I am flying solo. Neil Lynch, the co-host of Tri-State Sports Guys. No help on this one. 100% flying solo. No Mike D. No Tony D. No JT. It's just me. So if you are not a fan, now's the time to call in and express your hate. It's okay. I'm all about love here. There's no problems. Kind of a rough weekend for me. Labor Day weekend. I went down to the Jersey Shore. Kind of bummed because the Jersey Shore is getting canceled after this season. So I feel like it really brought a lot of notoriety, a lot of attention to the Jersey Shore to let people know where I go during the summer. But a little bit of a rough weekend. I'm suffering from what they call squanitis, meaning I kind of banged up, not going to lie. It takes a lot out of you, the kind of partying that I do. But with that said, I'm going to power through. We're going to talk about the obvious big story today, the Giants-Cowboys opening of the 2012 NFL season. It's ridiculous watching the pregame show right now. They got so much just pomp and circumstance going on. I think I saw dancers wearing gold shoulder pads earlier. With all that set aside, kind of even keel right now, which is unusual for me. I'm a huge Giants fan. And, people are asking me, are you worried? You know, Mike D has been asking me week after week, are you worried about this week? Are you worried about the season? And, I've played it cool, PIC as I like to call it, but the injuries are starting to get to me. And the big news right now is that Prince Amukamara is out for tonight's game, and Michael Coe will be replacing him. The key for the Giants tonight is to really get some pressure on Romo. You know, a lot of the reports coming out of Cowboys camp is that, you know, Romo's a different kind of guy. He's the kind of guy that he's matured, he's learned, he's settling down, he's married, having kids. The keys for them are, keeping him off the turf and making sure that they create throwing lanes for him. They got to make sure that he can step up in the pocket and see his receivers. I mean, they were just reporting about they had Tom Brady mic'd up during the Super Bowl, and he was telling Wes Welker, it's hard to see. It's like throwing through a forest when you're playing the Giants because they get their hands up, which is exactly what you're taught as a D lineman coming into the game. You know, you need to keep your hands up, and if you can't get to the quarterback, then make sure you bounce back and get your hands up, jump, and make sure you knock down the ball. And this game has been hyped to no end. It is a lot of talk on both sides. You know, the Giants, like we've been saying for I don't know how long, you know, they kind of like to come off as, oh, we don't talk trash. But, you know, with the addition of Black Unicorn and Martellus Bennett, and, you know, there's a lot of talk back and forth. And I like it. I know Mike D likes it. It adds a lot to the game. It adds a lot of hype to the game. And, it should be a good one. It should be exciting. People ask me, am I worried? Am I pumped? And, I wasn't too pumped before. I got a five-hour energy in me now, so I could, run a marathon with painted in Giants red and blue. But, it's one of those things where you don't want to get too amped for the opening game. I know that sounds crazy, and it's almost impossible. But it's a long season. And if anyone proved that last year with the Giants, you know, they 9-7, they were 7-7. I mean, I was on there's a website that it's amazing. It can calculate the percentages on playoff probabilities and possibilities. And it was, the Giants were at maybe like 26% for the sixth seed, and they end up winning the division and getting the fourth seed. Mostly, many believe, because due to the Cowboys' errors last year and the inability to hold on to the ball and to capitalize on Giants' mistakes. And, obviously JPP's block was huge, but Miles Austin catches that ball that he supposedly loses in the lights, and the Giants aren't Super Bowl champions. I don't know that I put too much weight on this game. I think if the Giants lose, it's not the end of the world. I know the Cowboys are have been looking forward to this for a long time, so they're going to come out ready to go. And the question marks for the Giants, can they run the ball? Last in the league in running and rushing last year, Ahmad Bradshaw has his problems injury-wise. Is David Wilson going to be able to fill in and contribute like he can? One of the major cuts during the offseason, D-Ware, he was cut. He's no longer with the team. I think he signed with Tampa Bay recently. So that's one of your bigger backs going away. They now have a very small backfield. So how is that going to play out? Is David Wilson durable? We'll see. But, you know, in terms of how the Giants' D is looking and what we can expect from the Cowboys, Jason Witten is expected to play. I know whenever there's a spleen injury, it's a situation where it's up in the air. You know, I'm not a doctor, but no one really knows how that kind of plays out. Is that something that can sideline you for a while? Is it something that can end your career? I mean, I remember Phil Simms' kid, Chris Simms, when he was playing for Tampa Bay, starting for them. You know, if you remember, he was running to the goal line jumps, and he crushed his inner organs somehow and was bleeding internally. And you know, that was the last time we saw him on the field. So Jason Witten, in my mind, rolling the dice in tonight's game. One of the storylines that I was hoping to talk about that's a little off topic, doesn't really have a lot too much to go to do with the game, is recently Forbes came out with a list of franchises that are, you know, the most valuable franchises, the ones that are most profitable, that make the most money. And again, the Dallas Cowboys are the most valuable team in sports, valued at over $2.1 billion. I don't understand it. I know that there are a lot of Cowboys fans. There are especially a lot of Cowboys fans in New Jersey and New York, which kind of baffles me. I know that the 70s were really a successful time for the Cowboys, and so that's when a lot of people, you know, tend to make their affiliations when they're kids. But, you know, after that, you had them dominating in the early to mid-90s when the Giants were kind of in the Ray Handley era, in the Dan Reeves era, not really performing like they could. America's team, yeah, I get it. Maybe it's the fact that, Jerry Jones gets so much money from those Papa John's commercials he's been doing. I don't know if anyone has seen that, but, oh, man, talk about cheesy. I mean, I understand the old, like, are we going to get over the old person rapping bit? Like, is that still funny? I know that when rap was first, like, coming in vogue and, you know, Snoop Dogg and gangster rap was starting to get noticed in mainstream media, and people were worried about, you know, how it's going to affect the youth. Like, maybe an old person rapping then would have been a little weird or funny or even risque. You know, I know that you had the rapping grandma and wedding singer. That was kind of funny. But it's 2012. Like, can we get over old people rapping? It's about time. So, main storylines for tonight. Eli, he's now considered among the elite, in my mind. You know, he's proven himself. There are now even some people saying that he's better than his brother. I'm one of those people. I think that, you know, and, you know, you can see from the fantasy drafts that have been happening over the past couple of weeks, Peyton Manning's not going anywhere nearly as high as Eli. And that's not to say, you know, Eli's a first, second, third rounder. You know, that those spots are reserved for guys like Breeze, Rodgers, and Stafford. But I can very easily see Eli putting up Rodgers or Breeze type numbers this year. You know, the main knock on him has been his inconsistency, and I can understand that. I've seen games where, you know, in that first or second drive, that this is not Eli's day. This smells like a three interception day. He's just off. Receivers are not catching the ball. But you know, he has the ability. I think he's growing. He's still growing as a quarterback. I mean, he's only 31 years old. He's got a chunk of years left in him. And I think that you're going to see, we talked about Tony Romo maturing. I think Eli is maturing as well. And I don't know that you're going to see as many of those bad off games that we commonly see during the season against horrible teams. And, you know, I don't know that you're going to see, if you do see another 9-7 season this year, which is very likely, very possible, It's not going to be because the Giants are losing to teams like the Seahawks and the Redskins twice. It's going to be because they're in tight games and they're playing tough teams, and you know they're not making the kind of mistakes that they did last year. It's just that they have the toughest schedule in the NFL. You know, and Victor Cruz is no longer a mystery. They're showing him right now when they played him last year. Tremendous with the yards after the catch, but the thing is, not a mystery anymore. People know his deal. They know he's quick. You know he's fast. You know, the 49ers did a fairly good job of covering him for most of the game in the NFC Championship, but then he would get open. He would find cracks. He'd find soft spots, and very elusive. And so I think that the Giants would have been in a tougher position if Hakeem Nicks didn't come back from this injury, this foot injury. The fact that he's back now is only gonna help them, you know. And they're, you know, the other question mark was the third receiver. We've mentioned this week after week. Is it going to be Reuben Randall? Is it going to be Ramsey's Barden? Who's going to step up and replace Mario Manningham? And that was the beauty of the Giants' offense last year. You shut down Nicks, you have Cruz. You shut down Cruz, you have Manningham. You shut down Manningham, you have Nicks. You know, there was a handful of games where they didn't really have a full receiving core. And so they're going to have to rely on Bradshaw and Wilson out of the backfield if that third wide receiver doesn't come around. But from what I've heard, from what I've seen, Reuben Randall has the goods. He can make plays. He can stretch the field. You know, LSU wasn't a passing offense. But I think Eli and, you know, Mike D is going to absolutely choke himself when he hears this. But Eli has that ability to really make his receivers better. I don't know that if you put Victor Cruz on another team that he will put up the numbers he did last year. And I don't know if you can say the same for Nicks. Nicks and Cruz both – two of the most physically gifted wide receivers I've ever seen on the Giants roster. You know, Amani Toomer is the leading receiver in franchise history. What is it about Amani Toomer that excites you or that surprised you or that made you think, wow, this guy is like an athlete? It wasn't. It was the fact that he learned how to play the position. He ran routes and he eventually got to the point where he was able to use his experience to his advantage. Nicks and Cruz are already at that level in my mind. You know, physically they have the speed. I've never seen a Giants wide receiver take a ball, you know, 7 yards down the field and take it 77 yards. Just blow past defenders. It's very unusual for me. But I think they're entering a really successful era in the franchise. And you know, all Giants fans have that nasty flashback that we had in 2008. You know, we think, okay, 2011 was just like 2007, so maybe 2012 is going to be just like 2008, where we coast and we really look like we're the number one team. We prove we're the number one team in the regular season, and then we come out and we absolutely mess the bed against the Eagles. I don't know that that's going to happen this year. I think, you know, a lot of people were high on them in 2008, and maybe that went to their head. But, you know, I think the defense is in a better position. I think Eli's in a better position, just mentally, psychologically. I don't know that Coughlin's going to let that happen again. And, you know, obviously the competition has gotten better. 49ers have gotten better. There's no question about that. And to me, I think the 49ers are going to be the team to beat. I think Harbaugh has really turned their organization around, and, you know, the offense looks like it's improved. I don't know that the Saints are really going to – I think the Saints are just too mired in a horrible situation to really come out and perform and forget that all that's happened all during the offseason. And, you know, so from the Cowboys standpoint, you have to take a look at the running backs. You have DeMarco Murray and Felix Jones. In my mind, you know, and a lot of people's minds, DeMarco Murray is the man that's going to get the bulk of the carries. Felix has shown that he's a little bit injury prone. I know DeMarco's had some issues as well. But you look at these yards per rush last year. I know they brought this up before, but yards per rush are off the charts. He has breakaway speed. He's almost like a Felix Jones clone in a lot of ways. And, you know, the key for Dallas is really maintaining that balance and making sure that they put teams away. You know, that was it's almost reminiscent of the Eagles, you know, and how the Eagles have always had a problem with leads because Andy Reid gets either too conservative and he doesn't really go for the kill. And for the Cowboys, it's got to be, you know, stay mentally focused. And, you know, if Dez Bryant is your go-to guy and you're saying, and you know how you, it, you know, there are rumors that there are rules, you know, they're denying the rules. I think the rules are a little ridiculous to a certain extent, but you do have to be on top of that kind of stuff. You do have to rein him in a little bit. You know, you don't want to lose that cockiness. You don't ever want to lose that cockiness. But you want to make sure that he understands that cockiness is confined to the field. That he's not losing, he's not using it in bad situations where he can, where only bad can result. You know, obviously, it's got to be, no one's really picking the Cowboys. And I know that the Eagles were the favorite. I don't know that the Eagles can be a favorite, knowing that Vic is so fragile. I know he has this new Kevlar vest or whatever that prevents him from dying from gunshots. But to be honest, I think that you're going to see a three-way battle. I think RG3 is going to be fun to watch. But, you know, honestly, I don't see the Redskins competing. I think when you take a look at the Cowboys, and I don't know that you can be that confident. I know they can move the ball. I know they can score. Romo showed some guts last year. But at the same time, it's got to have a lasting effect. There's got to be someone in that locker room saying, last year was last year, this year is this year. So forget about last year. Let's go out, play who we can play. They made tremendous upgrades in the secondary. I know that. So, you know, I don't think they're going to get burned as much there. And, you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be a tight three-way race. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I know a lot of fans are looking forward to it. I don't know about this Wednesday night business, right? The Wednesday night game is throwing me off. I can't get into it. I don't know what to think. Like, I'm not in football mode right now. You know, a lot of people thought it was going to be Thursday or tomorrow. But, you know, it got bumped for some guy named Obama. I don't know the guy, but he must be important. So I'm also not a fan of the NBC broadcasts, like to point that out. I know Al Michaels is a staple, and we're also used to his voice, and it's nice to listen to, but I just got a weird feeling about Collinsworth. You know, Collinsworth has never really been a Giants fan, and he tends to take shots at them, not cheap shots, but just shots. There's just like little backhanded compliments, and, you know, maybe this is the year that he comes around, although I'm not too sure I want people on board with the Giants. When the fans and the critics, and when people come on board for the Giants, that's when bad things happen. It's called jinx. You're jinxing the hell out of the G-men. And you know, I've always been a person that would rather have them play the underdog card. They seem to play it well, and that's when they play their best. When everyone's counted them out. So when they're favored, or when people are praising them, talking highly, it's one of those situations where it's going to come back to bite them. You know, it's just one of those things. I mean, 31, and, you know, I've been watching them since I was 5, and just that's always seems to be the case. So I'm all for the downplaying and for the flying under the radar. I mean, that's how the Giants roll, and that's how they succeed. Well, it should be a good game. I'm looking forward to it. I got it on right now. And, I'm sure there are going to be huge headlines, huge stories. It's going to be a close game. It should be a barn burner. It should be a shootout. We should know a little bit more about how the Giants will cope after this game. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys pull out a victory here. I know O probably thinks I'm pulling the reverse con, but I can see this being a, high 20s, low 30s game where it comes down to the end, like it did in Dallas last year. It should be a good barometer of how the rest of the season should go, but I don't want to invest too much stock in it. I think that it's great for the rivalry, it should be a great way to kick off the NFL season, but in no way am I putting any too much stock in it. So moving on from the Giants, we're talk a little bit about the Jets. I don't have much to say about the Jets. Last week I said that they would go out there on the, this is the week where you have a lot of big names getting cut for one reason or another. Salary, underperforming, didn't like where they were. The organization wanted to go in a different direction, what have you. So I thought, okay, well, the Jets don't have a whole lot going for them right now, offensively. So there's got to be a couple big names out there that are going to fall into their laps. They're going to come off waivers, they're going to get cut, and that's how they're going to improve their offense. They're going to get a wide out or a tight end or someone. And, no one. No moves. And it's kind of, I don't know that you can really do that. I mean, they cut their punter. I know, and they got the distraction of Sanchez dating Eva Longoria, which we had talked about the rumors of that relationship, a couple months ago, and we said, what's the deal there? Forget about the age gap, because whatever, the age is just a number. But I mean, Dirty Sanchez with Eva Longoria, and like having it be big time news, and I know we keep saying it, but Jets have got to take a note or cue from the Giants. Just lay low, and I don't want to say that the Giants don't talk at all, but, really try and keep the issues in-house. And, Giants have had their issues in the locker room. The Prince ice tub situation incident with Weatherford and JPP. But I just feel like there's a different mentality about how the Giants go about their business than the Jets. And I don't know that the Jets have that yet. There's news coming out from ESPN that Santonio Holmes is saying that the Tebow trade initially floored Sanchez. Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of surprised pretty much everyone, because they just signed Sanchez to an extension. So it's like, why would you go out and get another quarterback? Say what you will about the signing, about the trade. A lot of people think that it's going to make Sanchez better. I don't know. I mean, Mike D has said he's seen a difference in the way that he has handled himself. I know that Sanchez has definitely tried to change his demeanor, the way he acts. He doesn't want to come off as that inexperienced rookie anymore. He really feels that he is now the leader. And, the big storyline with him is, okay, so he's getting all kinds of comparisons to Eli, which some of it warranted, some of it not warranted. Obviously the big comparison is, well, this is his fourth year. In Eli's fourth year, he was in the Super Bowl. He was a Super Bowl champion. But if you remember that year, and there was a numbers comparison, stats of Sanchez versus Eli in the first 3 to 4 years of their career, Sanchez has better numbers. You know, I know Eli in his first year, he rolled the bench, came in halfway through, looked just awful. Those were some bad times. But 2005, he comes out, and with the addition of Plasko, looks like a guy who everyone thought he would be, a franchise quarterback with a big-time arm who can make plays if he's protected. You know, no one was thinking that he's going to be Peyton, but except the Giants. But then you look at Sanchez, and Sanchez had a pretty decent rookie year. You know, I mean, he's experienced success, and there were only a couple games last year that could have gone the Jets' way. A couple games go the Jets' way, and who knows? They make the playoffs. People aren't talking as much. And, you know, obviously he's under the gun now, and you could say that he's been treated unfairly, that the Tebow addition has just been, you know, a real sock to the gut, a real knock to the ego. I get that. I understand that. But we'll see. I mean, it's a wait and see with Sanchez. I know that if he does get let go by the Jets, he's got to get picked up by someone else, because you look at the talent around him on offense, and, you know, I just had a fantasy football draft last night. I'm now in three leagues. I keep saying I got to stop joining so many leagues, and then I do worse. I join a million. Had a fantasy draft last night, had a couple of fantasy drafts before, and, you know, offensively for the Jets, it's like you pretty much have Dustin Keller going first. You know, Sean Green's kind of, you know, people are not happy when they have to pick Sean Green. You know, I got Santonio Holmes in, I don't even know what round. I got him, he was he's my fourth or fifth wide receiver. And he's the number one on the team. I mean, it's tough for you to knock Sanchez when he can only do so much. You know, Eli had plaques. And say what you will about Shockey, but the guy made catches, and he would break tackles, and he was good down towards the goal line, as was Plax. Eli had Tiki Barber. Tiki Barber went up for 2,000 yards in 2005, 2006. You know, the guy was up for MVP of the league. So, I mean, Eli had weapons, you know, early on in his career, and even in 2007 when Tiki wasn't there, you know, he still had a pretty decent offensive line that could get him through some tough situations. So, I mean, I was kind of high on the Jets when they first got Tebow. I thought, wow, why not? I mean, you're so limited offensively. You know, offensively, you didn't really perform up to snuff last year after some pretty good campaigns on the ground the years before. So why not add a guy who can play a couple different positions, who's tough to bring down, and who has that, you know, I hate to sound like Rick Riley or something like that, but he has that it factor. You know, he has that ability to come back and rally the troops and get the team excited. So, you know, I feel for you, Jets fans. I just don't know that I can be that optimistic. I don't know how the Jets fans can be that optimistic. I know that they seem to be a little bit better at the offensive line position now that Hunter's gone. And, you know, Hunter, of course, shoots back that he thinks Jets fans are brutal. Well, duh, Jets fans are brutal. I mean, I would be brutal, too. If, you know, he called the Jets fans sharks, and he called them brutal. Yeah, brutal sharks. Obviously, when you have your organization treat you like a redheaded stepchild. I mean, you can't honestly think that and a lot of it has to be like, it's that New York mentality, it's the Northeast mentality. That's just how professional sports are in the Northeast. They're taken very seriously, and, you know, this isn't, it's not San Diego. It's not Miami. You know, there's that hard nosed edge to it. That, I mean, that's just, it's in our DNA. It's in our blood. If you're born and raised here and you've lived here a long time, it's that's it's part of your life, part of your the DNA. So Wayne Hunter calling Jets fans brutal. Yeah, I mean, that's why the teams in the New York area in the Northeast, they're held to a higher standard. You have to perform. There's a higher price tag. You know, New York teams have historically been the teams with the higher price tags, higher payrolls. And there's a reason for that, because the fans expect greatness. They want championships. You know, and that's what the money's going to. It's going towards talent. It's going towards a better stadium. It's going towards, you know, better personnel to get you to that championship game and to win championship games. That said, you look at a team like the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, most profitable franchise, and you got to give it up to the fans, because there have been a lot of, like, iffy moves on the Cowboys' part. You know, a lot of excitement and a lot of positivity around the Cowboys organization, and their fans have stayed positive from what I can tell. You know, obviously I don't live down there, but it seems like organization gets down and they're very supportive. And so Wayne Hunter has to know that. I don't know where the dude's from, but, like, let's get serious, dude. Like, we're not going to – you can't just ole every time you get out in the field and let your star quarterback get drilled and not expect to get booed, not expect, you know, fans to react. You know, we're not all the 10-year-old Miami Heat fans saying good job, good effort out there. It's just not how it works. And, you know, I don't know if there's much more to say about the Jets. You know, I don't know that I can see Rex Ryan getting fired. I don't know if it's a byproduct of his coaching. I just think that there are a couple of elements on that team that are cancerous. You know, we've talked about Santonio Holmes being cancerous and how he's, you know, a detriment to the ball club. How, you know, Cromartie might not be such a great fit. Darrell Revis, you know, is he such a good fit? And those are your star players. Those are supposed to be the guys that are leading your team, that are leaders in the clubhouse, leaders on the field. And I don't know that you can necessarily look at them and feel good about your team, you know, other than Sanchez. And, you know, a lot of people, I don't know that many Jets fans take Tebow seriously. You know, there are Tebow fans and there are Jets fans. I don't know that you have many Jets fans that are supporters of Tebow. It's just Tebow fans, Jesus freaks, Christians. So, you know, I mean, I just hope that their games get a little more exciting. I mean, the main knock for me has been that it just seems like it's lost that flash and that glamour and that shine. It's, you know, three and outs and then, you know, just bad mistakes late. And, you know, I just want to see them, as a Giants fan, I just want to see them compete, because they're on the TV when the Giants aren't. You know, I don't get DirecTV or Red Zone, so I need to watch football, and I need the Jets to be better, basically. So transitioning from pro football to college football, like I said, I was down in Manasquan this past weekend, long weekend, very long weekend. Didn't see a lot of sleep. Didn't see a lot of college football. You know, Saturday I was kind of stoked. You know, we had talked about the Notre Dame Navy game being played in Ireland, which I think is a great idea. Needs to happen more often, but, you know, 9 a.m. start time, that's rough. Luckily, we had people in our shore house down in Manasquan that are early risers, apparently, and like to get after it right when the sun comes up, which is not my style, personally. I'm not really a morning person. I like to sleep in. I'm more of a night owl. So, you know, took me a while to adjust. Didn't help that our TV was face down on the floor with the cable box disconnected, so we needed to figure that out in order to get the game on. But once it was on, it was fun to watch, and, you know, something that I'd like to see from now on. I did get to catch the Michigan-Alabama game. I don't know that a lot of people had Michigan winning that game. I know I didn't. I thought it would be a little closer. You know, I'm not shocked that they were blown out of the water, but, you know, so many people are high on Denard Robinson. I know I'm particularly high on Denard Robinson. I grew up a, you know, not a diehard Michigan Wolverines fan, but I did follow them for most of my childhood. You know, when they had Tyrone Wheatley and what have you. And, you know, it looks like Alabama's, you know, en route to another dynamo year, which I'm not a huge Nick Saban fan, so I'm not too happy about that. But I think, you know, talking about some other big stories around college football, USA smoked Hawaii. It looks like, you know, Barkley is the early favorite for Heisman, and deservedly so. A lot of people thought he could have came out last year and been a top 10, top 15 draft pick. So I don't want to get into X's and O's of college football. Like I said, I didn't watch too much. I did watch the Baylor SMU game. You know, looks like the kid who replaced RG3, Florence, looks like they didn't miss a beat. I know they got off to a pretty slow start in the first half, and I had a buddy of mine who was betting the over, and it was not looking good for the first half, and he was getting pretty antsy. But then, you know, calmed them down and said that they'll turn around the second half. No issues, no worries, and of course they did. But in terms of other things that I watched and that I paid attention to with college football, not sure if you guys saw, but there was a huge billboard. As we all know, Texas A&M joining the SEC, they decide to put a billboard in Gainesville, Florida. The billboard reads, "Howdy, Gainesville. You've been annexed by Aggie Nation, the best academics and cleanest program in the SEC. Whoop! Exclamation point!" With a tagline, "Real football, real tradition." That's the Aggies getting pretty aggro right there. I mean, kind of uncalled for, but I think if we've learned anything from my stance on trash talking, it's go big or go home. You know, you don't want to come in and half-ass it. So kudos to Texas and A&M for coming in hard with the trash talk. Gators, of course, were entering their first game of the season with the two quarterback rotation. I talked about it last week. I'm not a fan. I don't see how that helps your ball club. It disturbs the rhythm of the game. You know, I guess the hope from the coach's standpoint is that one player will look better from drive to drive or from quarter to quarter, and then you'll play the hot hand. That's a risky proposition in my mind. And, of course, after the game, they ended up naming Driscoll as starting quarterback. So we should expect some more consistent play from Florida here on out. The big upset of the weekend, Toledo. The Penguins beating the Panthers. Pittsburgh going down to Youngstown State. Youngstown State is one of those programs that's kind of like Appalachian State. They're like a 1AA team that, you know, always seems to come up and play big against D1 programs. So that was good to see. I'm always a big fan of upsets. Of course, I pay attention to the more offbeat items of the week. And BroBible.com released a college football drinking game for everyone to participate in. I didn't partake in it, but, you know, some of the rules that I liked: drink for the duration of the kickoff while the ball's in the air. Drink every time your game is interrupted by a score update. Every time a team goes for it on fourth down, drink twice. So head on over to BroBible.com to check that out. And not a bad way to spend your Saturday. Drink every time Lee Corso puts on a mascot's head. Drink every time the camera zooms in on a girl you would, I'll say, lay with. You know, because we're trying to keep it PG here. Other football news. This is a little more offbeat, not really college football. But there was for the first time, I guess, and this doesn't sound right, but first time in high school football history, there's potential for a female quarterback to get game action. And, you know, I actually have a story that's somewhat related to this. When I was in high school and I was a sophomore, I was a quarterback on the JV team, looking to get some playing time in varsity, and they had me take snaps from a freshman center, who was a girl. I mean, I thought I was being punked. I went along with it. You know, I was not exactly a Don Juan sophomore year in high school. So I got underneath there. I made sure that I was professional, I guess. And, you know, I don't think she made the team. And she never called after that. I was really disappointed. But, you know, kudos to, I think it's Tony D that's totally against females playing sports. We're not a big fan, but, you know, I'm for it. You know, and I know there have been a lot of female kickers, but I think this is the first female quarterback. And, you know, I'm looking at the video now, and she looks like she's got an arm. So, more power to her. Her name's Erin DiMiglio. She'll make Florida history, my bad, if she gets into a regular season game this year. 17 years old, rocking the ponytail. Number 13, which, you know, could go either way. 13, unlucky number, but it is Dan Marino's number. Would love to get Dan Marino's take on that. So we'll transition from football over to baseball. The Mets have been out of contention for a while. And, you know, Mike never wants to talk about it because he gets visibly upset. He gets a little bit of agita. I like to talk about it because it helps you work out the kinks. It makes you think about what they could do for next year. You know, when we were on there last week, they had a heartbreaking loss, 1-0. But they went on to sweep the Marlins. Jason Bay had a grand slam, which is just unheard of. And, you know, it's moments like that where you think maybe they could turn around. You don't know. You know, obviously it stinks that they're thinking about shutting down Harvey, but they've had a couple of young guys come up and look good. Colin McHugh, for one. I know that he comes out, his second start, not as great. I think he went 4 or 5 innings. But in that game, they almost come back. The bullpen has been huge. There's no question about that. I mean, the bullpen has, you know, of course it's way too late now. But they've, you know, awoken from their slumber, and they seem to be progressing and holding leads and keeping them in games, which is all we asked for. You know, you begin to. I'm one of those guys that always wonders what could have happened if they got this kind of output from their bullpen from day one. Where would they be right now? They'd be in the hunt, in my mind. They'd be in the wild card race. I don't know that they'd be leading, but they would be in it. I know it was a rocky start from McHugh, but I still think he's going to be part of that rotation next year. You know, they're playing the Cardinals tough. I mean, I just don't want to see them get blown out. You know, I don't mind them losing as long as it's close and it's interesting and they give me some kind of hope for next year. That's basically the takeaway for this. You know, the huge call on Monday, Labor Day, was, you know, it's 5-4. Torres smokes double down the line, coming around first, and you think, oh, well, no outs, guy on second. They have, you know, big-time bat coming up. It's looking good. And I don't think I've seen this possibly ever. But they end up checking at first to see if Torres touched the bag, and he didn't. Dudes calls him out. It's a young ref, a young umpire. And so, you know, and Terry Collins was asked about it. He said, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen that. I don't know that you can make that call in a tight ball game. They showed the replay a million times, and from what I could see, his heel touched the bag. And as long as the guy is not completely off, I think you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. And of course they end up not scoring any runs and they lose the ball game. But they come back today and Dickey throws another gem. He's the first pitcher in the majors to 18 wins, which is, I think he's going to get to 20, and I think that's huge. And I've gone back and forth on this. I know Mike D last week said that, you know, he's a huge chip to trade. He's a huge, valuable player to trade, get some talent back. But I don't know. I mean, he's such a great story. He's done so much for the team. And he's a rock. He's a guy that he can go out there. You know, the question mark for us at the halfway point was, is this real? Is this the real Dickey or is this a fluke? Is this a flash in the pan? And although his numbers are not as good for the second half of the year, he's proven himself as a fake or phony. And I think there are just other ways to go about it. I think there are other ways to get talent. I think there's a lot of depth that the Mets have that they can get some good assets from, especially from teams that are rebuilding, you know, and you could say the Mets are rebuilding, and that's true to a certain extent, but they're not. They still show flashes. And as long as they're showing flashes, I'm going to keep tuning in. Mostly because I just love the broadcast team. And, you know, I've said this before, and it's stating the obvious, but, I mean, it's a award-winning broadcast team. I mean, say what you will about Keith, but Ron and Gary are just on point, and they keep it interesting. I can't say the same for the Yankees. I've tried watching the Yankees. It's a mess. It's like you would think that they're the Astros. I mean, these are guys that are in the thick of the race. Absolute meltdown. Absolute collapse. And you have Michael Kay and Paul O'Neill just kind of shooting the breeze like they're playing down in spring training. I know I'm repeating myself. I sound like a broken record, but you got to be kidding me. These are huge games, and it's just dead air, silence, and then announcing the obvious. Pitch to the plate, strike, 1-1. Yeah, thanks, dude. I can read. I can see it on the screen. Give me some insight. Give me some kind of knowledge. I mean, do they not subscribe to Stats LLC? That's a prereq, isn't it, for every broadcast team? You got to have stats, like just stats upon stats. You got to have the director, the producer in your ear just saying, say this, say that. It just seems like they go in there and they're just like, they're eating Dunkin' Donuts and thanking Dunkin' Donuts half the time. Like, if you're Dunkin' Donuts, you're pumped. But anyone else, and you're like, why am I watching this game? I might as well put it on mute and play, like, you know, I would say the radio team, but the radio team catches a lot of flack as well. But, you know, despite having one of the better records in the league, they've had a losing record the second half of the season. And, you know, I was listening to Boomer and Carton this morning, and some people were suggesting it's because they can't bunt. That's ridiculous. I mean, we all know that. Mike D has questioned why most major leaguers don't know how to bunt. And in my mind, it's like because most of them, for most of their careers, haven't been asked to bunt. You know, they're not at the major league level because they know how to bunt. So, I mean, we can chuck that out the window, but I just thought it was something that would blow everyone else's mind who didn't catch the broadcast. A-Rod's back. I don't know how valuable he'll be. Obviously, he hasn't made a great impact coming back. You know, Tech's been banged up. And, you know, Granderson's been hurt. Cano's been hurt. I think Cano had a bomb last night. Rumor is Pettit has been throwing off the mound. You know, is it too little, too late? It's one of those situations where, you know, the O's are just playing out of their minds. I mean, the O's, out of the three teams, the O's, the Blue Jays, and the Yankees, the O's have the best record in the AL East from the All-Star break on. And despite injuries and whatnot, the Blue Jays are playing I'm sorry, not the Blue Jays, the Rays. So you get the Rays, O's, and the Yankees. It's the O's with the best record in the AL East since the All-Star break, and then you got the Rays and then the Yankees. I mean, we've been talking about panic buttons since July, and now it's like there is no panic button because it's been smashed to bits. It's tough, and, you know, I don't know that too many Yankees fans were concerned about it before. I watched the Yankees game with a bunch of Yankees fans at the fantasy football draft last night, and there was a lot of just head shaking. A lot of head shaking, and, you know, they just seemed like they were lost for words. You know, what is it going to take for them to turn it around? And, you know, it's amazing to see the highs and the lows, and I don't know that it's identical to what happened with the Red Sox last year. But in my mind, it's kind of similar. The Red Sox were cruising for a long time. And then September comes along, and then it was the Hindenburg. You know, it was just disaster strikes. And, you know, if that does happen, if the Yankees completely collapse and miss the playoffs, what next? What happens then? A lot of people are saying that it's time to clean house. It's time to reduce the payroll. It's time to abandon ship. Are they going to pull a Red Sox? I mean, you look at what happened to the Red Sox this year. They're ditching people that have been affiliated with success there to give the franchise a new identity, a new face. And to a certain extent, it looks like the Yankees are heading that way as well. The other point that was brought up just as I was perusing the wire is the question of, would you rather have an irrelevant team all season, or would you rather have a team that barely misses the playoffs come September, collapse, call it what you will? I've been there twice. Mike D and I have been there twice. O's been there twice. 07, 08. Mets look like they're in the driver's seat. They're up, you know, double digits in the standings, and then it just all comes apart. It all falls apart. I will take, as horrible and as bitter as those seasons are, you still look back on them and you say, we were successful. There was success there. You know, and you don't want a 2 or 3 week stretch to really contaminate and pollute what was a really satisfactory season. Think about it. As a Mets fan, 07-08, do I really want to go through an entire season just seeing them, you know, win one, lose one, win one, lose one, win one, lose one, and never really be in the race, never be in the thick of things? Would I rather have them compete? You know, and you can say this about a lot of the AL East teams, you know, even though they didn't experience collapses, but they're just in a division that is just so tough and so tight that despite them playing well, they still miss the playoffs. But all those seasons of frustration, you know, not making it, just not making it. Look at the Orioles. Orioles have been mediocre for I don't know how long, and they're finally now getting to a point where they could take this thing. They could take the division. I mean, I don't know. Wouldn't you rather be, you know, a Red Sox? Maybe a Red Sox fan could call in and tell me otherwise. Would the Red Sox have rather been the Orioles for the past I don't know how many years? You know, or would they rather have, you know, maybe last year for the Red Sox was necessary. It was a necessary evil for them to really decide to shake things up. And, you know, maybe that was the Mets' downfall in 08. You know, I know they pick up Santana, so that's a huge pickup for them in that year. But, you know, I just don't see why you would ever, you know, and I'm sure all Mets fans are siding on the side of collapses versus irrelevance because, you know, when it comes to irrelevance, you know, say what you will, the Mets have been relevant only because of the jokes that are made about them. So I don't see why I would rather be a fan of a team that's an obscurity and kind of mediocre and just kind of put, you know, day in, day out, just going through the motions. I'd rather have a team that, you know, gives me something to cheer for, even if they do let me down. So I'll make a bold prediction. I know that Mike D made, it's not so bold now, but Mike D made a bold prediction. The Yankees are going to miss the playoffs this year, and it's looking that way. So Mike D wins the jackpot there, and I have to agree with him now. I know it's a little late, but I don't see the Yankees coming back. I don't see them making the playoffs, and I see big-time changes on the way, on the horizon. I really do. I just don't know that you can have another year where you have that hefty payroll and think that you can win. It's time to look elsewhere. It's time to look at your farm system. It's time to look, you know, at some young talent that's maybe unproven that has potential, you know? I don't know. I've been saying that for years just because I'm a Mets fan. I'm sick and tired of them getting over-the-hill talent that they overpay for. So moving from baseball, we don't have to say what. Mike D is Tony D is not here. He didn't make the trip to Hoboken, and I don't blame him. It's a rough commute. So we don't have to say what. We could do a little dude, are you serious? Not too many wacky headlines in the news on the internet this week. I guess we talk about I'm not a huge soccer fan. I need to be more involved with soccer. It's actually part of my job to cover soccer. But this story kind of stood out to me. 20-year-old soccer player got pulled from the stands and suited up for the Scottish national team and then scored a dramatic game-tying goal. I mean, that's huge. I don't know that you'll see that in any other sport at any other time anywhere else. I mean, I can't imagine being 20 years old at, like, a Mets game and, you know, the bullpen just catches on fire and everyone perishes. And when they separate the bodies and then we have a quick, you know, moment of silence, they're like, can anyone from the stands come down and pitch? We'd greatly appreciate it. I don't know that it would go out there and give them anywhere near the effort that they need. And I don't know a damn thing about the Scottish national team soccer team. Keep in mind, it's the women's soccer team. I didn't mention that, but not that it should make a difference for all the sexist listeners out there who were thinking that. But, you know, to each his own. Game-tying goal. I mean, that's huge. And how do you not sign that girl? How is she not on the national team from that point on? Like, did they just tell her, hey, thanks for coming up. Really appreciate it. You can go back to your life now. Chris Johnson, Titans running back. A lot of people are hoping that he'll have a bounce back year this year. Going high on the fantasy football draft boards. You know, speed was never an issue with him. It was a, you know, matter of where is his head at. He comes out and says that he can run a 40-yard dash in under 4 seconds. I mean, what, you run a 4.2 or 4.1? I mean, he just needs a gust of wind, right? Still a little obnoxious, though. 40-yard dash in 4 seconds. You'd like to see that kind of transition on the football field. You know, he didn't have too many runs where he pulled away from people last year. But the Titans have any kind of shot, especially with Jake Locker at quarterback, they need Johnson to run a 40 in under 2 seconds at least. I don't know. I had them winning the division. And I kind of immediately regret that because the Colts have kind of looked good. You know, Andrew Luck is, I think, my backup in two fantasy football leagues, and people are laughing their asses off. But Andrew Luck has looked good. And Donald Brown is another guy that I drafted in a couple leagues because, you know, I said he was a sleeper. We said he was a sleeper on the show a couple weeks ago. He's the kind of guy that kind of reminiscent of Tiki Barber. I don't know. He's not a huge guy, but he's quick, can catch the ball in the backfield. I'm not saying the Colts are going to win the division, but I don't know that they're going to be the 4-12, 6-10 team that everyone thinks they're going to be. So that leaves, you know, you got Titans, you got the Colts, you got the Jaguars, who, you know, I don't know that they're going to be any good this year, but again, MJD's back. Justin Blackmon has looked pretty decent in preseason. I picked him up late in the fantasy football draft last night. So I don't know that they're going to be a complete joke. A lot of people are saying that Gabbert, this is the year that Gabbert turns it around. You know, he's got another league under, he's got another year under his belt. So who knows? I mean, I think the Titans will do well. The Rams are hosting a stash bash. Thanks to the head coach. I like it. I think it's a great idea. I think more teams and more leagues have to have fun with their marketing departments. I know the Mets were doing it for a while early on with their T-shirt night. I almost picked up a Duda shirt. Would have been cool until he got demoted. But as a Giants fan, I miss that kind of thing. I know they're not they think it's hokey. You know, they don't want people, they don't want gimmicks to get people out to the ballpark. But still, a lot of stuff is fun and nice. I know that the San Francisco Giants held a tribute to Bruce Lee. They did Bruce Lee night, handing out Bruce Lee bobbleheads and figurines. They even had a promo video to promote it. And it was amazing. It was awesome. More teams need to get involved. Have fun with it. I'm not saying like nickel beer night. That could turn ugly. Maybe if, you know, basketball team scores 100 points, it's free corn dogs for everyone. They did in semi-pro. Why not? Third grader was banned for wearing a Peyton Manning T-shirt jersey at school in Colorado. This is in Greeley. I think it's called Greeley, Colorado. And the reason being, according to the article, is that there are certain numbers that are considered gangster in Colorado, and 18 is one of them. Kind of blown away by that. They're so in tune with the gang lifestyle and gang culture that they'd be able to catch the fact that they know what numbers are gang like. It just kind of blows my mind. I don't know how that they know that, A. And B, I mean, come on. It's Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning is the least gangster guy out there. A lot of young people getting suspended and banned and for just repping. You know, trying to let people know about who they like, who they support. It's BS. I mean, when we were in school, the one thing that was banned was the Big Johnson shirts. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but it was like the definite double and innuendo of like, it was some kind of apparel company, and it's like, oh, I got a Big Johnson. It's some guy holding like a large lacrosse stick or something like that, or a huge baseball bat in between his legs with a busty girl. Yeah, I get that. Okay, maybe we shouldn't be wearing that as young kids. But, like, I can't wear a Michigan jersey in Oklahoma, and I can't wear a Peyton Manning jersey in Colorado? Wow. Sticking with young kids is a 5-year-old pool prodigy, and his dad's looking to cash in on his talent. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. He's going to, you know, probably turn out to be the next Tiger Woods of a pool. You know, that's, I don't know. I mean, do you want that? Do you want to be a legendary pool player only to, you know, get hooked on a sleeping pill and have relations with a Denny's waitress? I don't know. I just, you never want to put too much pressure on kids, but at the same time, you don't want to be that dad that's like, too accepting of failure. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like nowadays everyone gets a trophy. There's no one loses. Everyone wins. Where do you draw the line? Like, this kid is five. I mean, is he pulling trick shots? In pool, I mean, how much money can you make playing pool? I just don't see a very lucrative future there. How is he going to cash in on his son's talent? You're talking about, like, tournaments where you can win, like, 500 bones? That's not going to get you that yacht, my man. I'm a big-time eater. I love competitive eating. I know a lot of guys do. I've been known to put a few back, a couple of buffalo wings. This one dude put back a record-setting 191 buffalo wings in just 12 minutes. That's rough. I don't know if I could do that. I want to try it. I'm all about accepting challenges. But that is just... that is rough in more ways than one. One is like keeping it down, not barfing everywhere. But I got to think on the way out. I mean, I've been through a Sunday fun day where I just put back wings after wings after wings at the bar. And of course, I got to go hot because I don't want anyone to think I'm a wuss. That Monday morning... It's almost like someone turned me into a rocket, into a spaceship, and they're launching me somewhere. The fire that is just, it's unthinkable. And then two more items before I sign off. Oscar Pistorius, who's the Blade Runner. Guy who was the first Paralympian to compete in the Olympics. You know, everyone thought, dude's a shoe-in to dominate at the Paralympics. Like, there's no question he's going to win gold. Ends up winning silver and claims the winner of the gold, cheated. Now, he only lost by about 0.07 seconds. But he claims that the guy who won, who I believe, I don't know where he's from, had longer blades. And it got to the point where they actually had to count, I don't know why they did this, but they counted the strides. And if you watch the video, it is a little weird because the guy who ends up winning the first half of the race is just, he's like not really anywhere to be found. And then he just comes out of nowhere in the second half and edges out Pistorius. And of course, Leon, when he finds out that his idol, the guy that who made him get into the game in the first place, says he cheated. He's like, well, it's unfortunate. It's really difficult to hear. You know, no one's happy about that. But if you're Pistorius, that sucks. I can't imagine that you go into a race and you're the favorite and you're supposed to win gold and you lose, that you got to take it like a man. It's not like, hey, just go get him out there next time. I mean, it's like you only get to that stage every once every 4 years, right? If I'm him, I come out and I say, cheated? Yeah, why not? I think you got to be a good sport in certain sports. But, I don't know, Paralympics. There's been a lot of scandal at the Paralympics. And we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, they're people. They have flaws just like the rest of us. But for some reason, because they're disabled or handicapped, we think, oh, well, they couldn't possibly be bad people. Newsflash, you're missing a limb. It's not like you're missing you're not missing morals or ethics. A lot of people got to be amputees because they have bad morals or ethics. And then lastly with Dude, Are You Serious? Kind of a poor week with Dude, Are You Serious? I don't know if that's my fault or is that just sports' fault? I'm going to go, it's sports' fault. Definitely not mine. But NHL 13, I know we don't talk too much about the NHL, about hockey. I kind of got back into it this year because of the Devils. You know, the Rangers are at the top of their game. They're resurging. They look like they're going to go far this year. I used to play NHL, the video game, like it was borderline insane how much I would play it. And, you know, I used to love it strictly for the hits. I remember playing, replaying, and replaying. nasty hits. And you could, and the best part about it was it had sound effects as well. You could listen to the sound effects as you replay it. Oh, beautiful. Anyway, NHL 13 coming out has new female legends. I'm kind of, I don't know, iffy about that. Female legends? I didn't even know there were female legends. I mean, you can play as women. I mean, that's pretty cool. Haley Wickenheiser and Angela Ruggiero, officially licensed replicated stars. Never heard of them. I mean, that's great. I think hockey is one of the few, if not the, they're willing to take chances. I mean, because come on, like, they have to take chances. So it could be a huge winner, it could be a huge fail, but I think there's more to it. There's got to be like a deleted scene or like a director's cut to that game. I mean, how does the locker room situation work out in NHL 13? I got to know that. We'll do some more digging on that. Don't have a 5 and 10. Like I said, I've come down with the squonitis. I'm hanging on by a thread. And the Giants are on. What do you want from me? It's the end of the first quarter. 0-0. Thrilling game. Thrilling contest. But next week, we'll have Mike D back. I'm sure everyone will be real happy about that. And, you know, make sure to check out the website, tristatesportsguys.com. Hit us up on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter. And, you know, we'll get back to you with a way, way better show next week. I'll put that out there. I'll put some money on that. But if you have an email you want to send, tristatesportsguys.com, tristatesportsguys@gmail.com, you know, we'll respond. We'll put it on air. And one final thing. JT brought this up to me recently. There's a campaign. There's a guy by the name of Andy Greenberg. He played for the Cubs. He came up in, I think it was like 2005 or it was a while ago. He comes up, his first major league at bat. He gets beamed in the head with like a 90-some-odd mile-per-hour fastball. And it like pretty much ended his career. So one pitch, one and done. Gets in the batter's box, bean in the head. His career's never the same. We've now got a campaign where I believe it's called oneatbat.com. I could be wrong, but oneatbat.com. You can sign a petition to, and you know, the guys, JT works with Triple Threat TV production company, I believe in Connecticut, in Stamford, Connecticut. They put together a promo video, and the point of the campaign is, let's get this guy one more at bat. They've been in touch with the guys, with the Chicago Cubs organization. They're willing to go through with it. All we need to do is get 100,000 signatures on the petition. I think it's doable. I don't know. I think, you know, when I signed it, it was only around 1,000, but that was last week. They are now up to around 18,000 signatures. They need, apparently they need 32,000 more. Regardless, it's a good cause. I mean, you know, put yourself in the guy's shoes. He goes out there. He's finally achieved his dream. Looking forward to it. And then it's basically, it all comes down, crashing down. It's a good cause. Definitely sign up for it. And, you know, let's make it happen. Again, the website for that is oneatbat.com. It's a sad story. Could have a really happy ending. And I believe Triple Threat TV, JT's company, will be covering it if it does happen. you know, who knows, it could be turned into a documentary, and it could be, you know, it could be something that turns out into a movie. Who knows? But it's one of those situations where you never want to see it happen, but some good can come out of it. Well, that's about it from me. Like I said, hit us up on the website. Check us out on Facebook, on Twitter. You can leave voicemails now. I really wish I remembered what the voicemail number was. But if you check out the website, we should have it up there. And be sure to check in next week for a stellar show. Definitely more banter. Definitely more entertaining stories. Definitely less squanitis. I promise that. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for listening. We actually might have an interview next week, so that could be cool. And as always, you can call in, write, Facebook, tweet, whatever. We'll check in with you next week. That's Tri-State Sports, guys. Peace out, guys.